Ross Molin Podcast.
You better listen.
Welcome back for episode 288 of the Ross Bolin Podcast, otherwise known as RBP288, presented by Bolin Media. I am your host, Ross Bolin, of course, joined today for your Wednesday episode by producer, co-host extraordinaire, Mr. Mike Moody. Mike, welcome back. How are you on this beautiful Austin, Texas day?
I'm pretty good, Ross, and it's Thursday, by the way.
Oh, yeah. You may have heard me say this is the Wednesday episode.
Yeah, yeah.
While today is clearly Thursday.
Okay. I thought, because we're all losing time during the quarantine. I thought today was Monday. I don't know what's happening.
Yeah. Some dude hit me on Twitter this morning and was like, new episodes dropping every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And he put like the Tyler, the Creator gif. Well, that was a fucking lie. And I was like, shit, dude. I didn't know anybody still knew what day it was. I thought I could totally get away with releasing this a day late, but real talk, we didn't have any sponsors for episode 288 because this economic situation has the podcast industry all jacked up just like everything else, and I was trying to see if I could make some magic happen last minute. It didn't work out, so episode 288 of the Ross Bolin Podcast is actually brought to you by you, the listeners. The RBP gang. Thank you for all of your support throughout 2020 so far, for your support during the several month stretch I've spoken to where my personal life really took its toll, and to everyone on patreon.com/RossBolinPodcast supporting the podcast directly to ensure it continues to exist forever and ever and ever. Forever. And special thanks to our OGs throwing down $100 a month in support of the show in the OG tier. Respect to the OGs. If you, too, possess a desire to support this podcast directly in exchange for two additional episodes of RBP ad-free each month for just $5, go to patreon.com/RossBolinPodcast. So announcements and shouts. Aside from getting your Wednesday episode on Thursday this week, I have another episode written for y'all already that's going to drop Friday. And you'll get your first premium ad-free Patreon episode of the month this weekend as well. It is content season, baby. Prepare yourself.
Prepare.
Big shouts, by the way. Prepare. Dude, anytime anyone says, be prepared, which I didn't say just now, but like the word reminded me, that song from The Lion King gets stuck in my head for like 2.5 hours.
Right. Well, you're a big Disney animated head, so probably anything anybody says will recall some kind of musical number from one of the Disney classics, right?
Yeah, just hopefully it's not The Brave Little Toaster, because then that's just this whole traumatic experience, and I'm too tired for that right now. Big shouts to Jade and Caitlin, two RBP gang members who just got engaged. That's fucking cool. Wow. I've never heard from two people who listen to the show who are getting married before, I don't think. But gangsters get married too, kids.
Yeah.
It's true. Happy birthday to Connor, coming May 1st. Thank you for getting your girlfriend Emily into the show. Speaking of that, with two announcements in a row with a female RBP gang member involved, I actually saw a stat on our Instagram. Our Instagram following at the Ross Bolin Podcast is 90% male. And I was like, holy shit. I don't know if it's just because I'm a male and I'm the dude posting all the content on there, but like, I know our listenership doesn't skew that far. I know it skews male, but oh my God, it's not 90%.
I thought you were going to say the opposite.
You would think, like, what the fuck? 90% male on Instagram. And I was like, God damn, we need more female members of the RBP gang to spread the word.
Yeah.
It's a major sausage fest, at least on Instagram. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
That's fine. But yeah, let's make it a goal to get more female followers and listeners, right?
Right? Fucking 90% on the gram. Wow. Anyway, also happy birthday to Riker. Please leave your friend Phaedra alone, because not only is their name Phaedra, you're bugging the shit out of them about trying to get you this birthday shout. Here it is. Riker, chill.
Okay, can I say those are two badass names, Phaedra and Riker. And
Phaedra,
Riker?
Phaedra. Phaedra.
Fuck yeah. Okay, and Riker?
Ryker.
Okay, well, call into the show, Riker, or send an email or at me at Mike Moody to let me know if your parents named you after William Riker from Star Trek.
Or
number one,
Riker's Island.
Or that.
It's two very different paths. It could be one of your parents did time on Rikers and it influenced them so much that they decided, or perhaps you were conceived there in some type of a, what's that called?
Conjugal visit situation. Yeah.
Conjugal visit. Conjugal visits, just as a concept, are one of the funniest things we have as human beings. Oh. And then Arrested Development like did so much with conjugal visits that I can't even like... Dude, if I ever go to prison, I'm not going to be able to pull off a conjugal visit because I'll be laughing the whole time about Arrested Development conjugal visits and the sexiness will be ruined.
He's a flamer.
Oh, God. And finally, happy birthday to Gord, the dog of listener Taylor... Here's another name for you, Mike. Bonagovsky.
I like it. Gord and Bonagovsky. I love it.
It is well known that our listenership has the most interesting names out of any podcast listenership in the entire world. It is known. Amends and fact-checking. President Abraham Lincoln did not enjoy retirement. Richard Nixon did not enjoy impeachment. The population of China is 1.439 billion. First segment. Hotline calls. So since today's show is brought to you by you, I thought who better to drive it and to at the same time give y'all a taste of how the hotline call extravaganza on patreon.com/RossBolandPodcast works, since all episodes on Patreon are ad-free. But keep in mind, there on Patreon, you will have your own private hotline. These calls today that you're going to hear were picked at random from 888-WR-BOLIN. That is our public hotline where we get thousands of calls, and they just get like buried in there, man. So it's really, really difficult to get your call played at this point if you're going through the public hotline. That being said, the Patreon one is obviously a much smaller subsect of the RBP community. It's about 1,000 people, and it's much easier for you to get your call played. So I can't say the number for the Patreon, obviously. That would destroy the purpose. But go to patreon.com/RossBolandPodcast. Become an official dues-paying member of the RBP gang for just $5 a month. Access that hotline. And enjoy the hotline call extravaganza this coming this weekend. I've picked out 6 calls to play for y'all today from all over the United States of America. And I'm excited to hear from y'all and see what you want to talk about. Mike, you want to go ahead and play the first one?
Let's do it.
Ross, Michael from Overland Park, Kansas. I just got done watching the Jordan Chicago Bulls documentary on ESPN.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm sure me, as long as many other gang members, want to get your takes on it. The documentary, maybe a Jordan versus LeBron type debate. I am personally Team Jordan, but that's neither here nor there. Yeah, love the pod. Shout out intern Natalie. Thanks.
All right, Mike, our first caller is also named Mike.
Some confusion there, Ross.
It's Michael from Kansas, and he's watching The Last Dance.
Yeah.
As is pretty much everyone I know. Mike, do you, as a non-sports fan, do you really give a shit about this?
I do. I've read some really great stuff about the documentary. You talked a lot about it on OCC recently.
We did. We spent like 20 minutes at the beginning of Oysters, Clams, and Cockles this week, Barrett and I discussing. Yes.
I'm going to jump in on it this weekend, but I know there's a lot of general interest in this doc, apart from sports fans and Bulls fans and stuff, just because Jordan kind of touched all of us as a person and as a brand back in the 90s, especially. And it was interesting, even while we didn't get to see a lot of his public persona back then, either because like he didn't offer it that much or because it was a different world with no like social media or cameras on every corner.
Right.
we all kind of loved him and cheered for him to the point where we demanded a movie starring him and the Looney Tunes in which they beat the shit out of an evil alien basketball team. And we made that movie a huge hit that's probably going to get a sequel finally.
It definitely is, yes.
I'm definitely down to dive into this doc series just as a picture of like just American culture.
So that's the really interesting thing to me about this. And you just touched on, in fact, the most interesting aspect of Michael Jordan as a human being, period, to me. Mm-hmm. And it's the time frame in which his iconic status was built. He came along at the perfect time to be able to achieve what he achieved with his personality, his personal life, and what we are now over the last 20 years have found out was a much more dramatic and inflammatory situation, which is a lot of what this documentary, The Last Dance, covers their last championship run and all of the drama that went down in that season and Scottie Pippen almost being traded. And what we found about Mike, though, about MJ, this dude that, as you put it, as a country, we idolized him. This was not like, it wasn't like now. Like, LeBron's the only guy that sort of has this thing. Wherever he goes, all these LeBron fans follow, and it's fucking weird. Mm-hmm. That's the lamest fucking thing I've ever heard. Everybody rooted for Mike. It wasn't a subsect. It wasn't like there were, like, probably Utah Jazz fans who were like, we don't fuck with this because of the racism and you know, yeah. The polygamy. But, no, the polygamy he'd actually be down with, I'm sure.
Yeah,
that'd be But everybody worshipped dude. Mm-hmm. And the fact of the matter is, Mike, and also Michael from Kansas, talking about Michael Jordan. This is confusing. We might as well just do Mike Tyson and Michael Jackson while we're at it. Let's just do the whole Jay-Z fucking Childish Gambino, Michael five J. mics Fox. Thing.
Yeah.
The fact is, Michael Jordan, he's not a very nice guy. In fact, he's an asshole. Michael Jordan isn't nice. And because he didn't have to deal with the 24/7 media cycle, the fucking 24-hour media cycle, rather, because he didn't have to deal with Twitter and Instagram and the paparazzi to the degree they exist now and reality television, he was able to – that was not a negative. And it's sort of this thing where, like, Kobe had a version of this too, right? Kobe on the court was an ass. Kobe off the court – once he became a mature adult, clearly was a very good dude and a family man. That has never happened with Michael Jordan, ever. In fact, he's never made the slightest effort in any type of PR way to make you think he's a nice guy or a good guy. Mm-hmm. He doesn't give a fuck what you think about him. And that's the weird thing about Mike. If Michael Jordan entered the league in 2020, his career would unfold in a completely fucking different fashion. It would be an utter and total dramatic shitstorm the entire time. He was a gambling psycho addict. Like, I don't want to call the man a gambling addict, okay? But if you gamble millions of dollars on shit like golf, you're a degenerate gambler at the very least. Whether or not you're an addict is somebody else's problem to diagnose you. A degenerate gambler... a dude that was a total prick to his teammates. It was very much a, like, you're on board with me and my program or you're fucking out situation. And there would have been a totally different image. And it makes me wonder if Brand Jordan would even exist in the capacity it does.
Yeah. What was the dynamic between him and Pippen off the court? Because on the court, it was
good.
Yeah.
Off of the court, I mean, there was a lot of drama that went on in the sort of give and take of their relationship, but that's what made theirs so perfect, is they had the understanding. Pippen, he has so many quotes about his relationship with Jordan from over the years, and whether or not he's ever fully copped to this, I do not know. But he knew his role. Mm-hmm. He didn't want to be number one. He knew he was the guy. He made Mike better. And Michael made him a lot better. And everything about them worked. And they had this understanding that made their relationship work. And it had rough patches and stretches where it was very unclear what was going to happen. And Scottie Pippen signed what is now arguably the worst contract in the history of professional sports at one point. I think it was like 11 years for like no money. And I mean, I just – the Chicago Bulls, and like they've touched on part of this in episodes one and two, there was like a cocaine and gambling ring. Like, it's like – it was way, way, way more dramatic than most people
realize.
Chicago
way, man.
Yeah, dude. It, I mean, so my biggest thing about The Last Dance, Michael from Kansas, is whether or not and how Michael Jordan's sort of how the 90s, the late 80s, the 90s, and this pre-social media era allowed him to become what he became. Because it's even like if you look at his swag back when he first entered the league, he dressed tight, like – he looked good, dude. He really did. Like there, it was part of the reason the shoe brand worked in the way that it did. But then as he got money and stopped giving a fuck, he started dressing like a total buffoon, and he has ever since. Dude, he'd get his balls fried off on Instagram every day.
Yeah.
He still does now, but it's too late for it to impact the brand or matter. And for whatever reason, like if anybody else in the world dressed as poorly as he does and tried to sell you shoes, they would go bankrupt.
What's a classic Jordan fit that just would not make it today? What's he wearing?
He's still wearing them, for the record, so he's still making them happen. But huge oversized jeans, inexplicably poor-tasted turtleneck sweaters, like the most bizarre fashion choice.
The man is stuck in the early 90s. Yeah.
Like, what the fuck was he wearing, dude? Every picture of him you can see from the 90s through like 2020. You're like, Mike, where did you get this outfit? It makes me wonder how many different personal stylists have begged him to employ them over the years. And if he ever just had one and ignored them completely.
Mm-hmm.
And what a horrific job that would be, laying out an outfit for Michael Jordan, a nice designer suit. And then he's like, you know what? No, I'm going to go with these fucking JNCO jeans specifically made for my 6'6 ass. I don't even know where he gets these clothes. Who makes clothes for a dude that large that look this bad?
Sears.
It's fucking incredible how he dresses. So that's the most interesting aspect of it to me. But in terms of the Jordan versus LeBron argument, this isn't Phil. I'm 32 years old, and I need that for the perspective that I'm about to give you. This argument is not a thing for me in my generation anymore. We're done. This documentary's first two episodes were probably the nail in the coffin. We're not doing this. It's not the same. LeBron is not Michael Jordan. Okay. Mike was in one city in Chicago with one other superstar. And he built a 6-championship career out of that. It's not the same. You don't get to go the route LeBron did and then be compared to Mike big picture. You just don't. It's look, that conversation, it really was never fair. It was built on potential. It was built on what we thought LeBron might do. It didn't go that route, and we can stop doing Jordan versus LeBron now. If you're younger than me and you're in this camp that thinks like now this is a conversation again, it isn't. Michael Jordan would make LeBron James cry on a basketball court in their primes versus each other, and I don't even mean that based on pounding him with his actual basketball skills, which would also happen. He would make that man cry by talking.
Or just staring at him.
Yes, different type of dude, different layer of human being, okay? And whether Kobe ever would have admitted it, I think the same thing with him. If you put those two dudes on a basketball court one-on-one, I don't care how much bigger and more dominant LeBron is offensively, the size, the weight, I don't care. Kobe Bryant in his prime versus LeBron in his prime, it's not a matter of basketball skills. It's a matter of who has more killer instinct. And that's what ends up mattering more in a one-on-one match than skills. This is, and I'm admitting this as a dude who, when I played sports, this was my biggest problem. because I was a pitcher. That was the thing I was best at in all sports. I loved playing everything, soccer, basketball, football. Oh, my God. I was so small. Got destroyed. Only played in middle school. They let me play linebacker for one play. I've told this story before, but they didn't even try to block me. I went straight through the line. I had a full straight-on line at the quarterback, and I went, this is it. This is my moment. And that kid stiff-armed me like 13 feet in the other direction. No sack. Didn't take place. But I had these moments, pitching especially, where it's you versus another person. And literally it is a mental game. It's who's going to mentally overpower the other person. Who is more mentally fit to sit here and be like, you can't fuck with me. And I got beat a lot because I didn't have that then. I didn't have the confidence in myself or the real, like, I didn't know that yet about me or that need. Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant, but Mike more than anybody, possess that more than any other person I've ever seen in terms of if you put him in a one-on-one box with anybody, and I put this in like any realm even, like beyond like, you know, Neil deGrasse Tyson talking science or some shit. If you put Michael Jordan down at a chess table against a great chess player, I genuinely believe he would mentally fuck that person off the board. Because he was that intimidating and insane. And it's the argument that I've always made on every show I've ever done and talked about anytime this any of these dudes come up. That killer instinct is to be as good as Michael Jordan at something, you have to be a crazy person. You cannot be like everybody else. You have to be a fucking psychopath. Just because you obsessed. Have to have another layer, Mike. You and I, we probably don't have that. Like, neither one of us really strike. If it's you and me running into two other dudes in an alley and it's like, kill or be killed, like, we're in trouble.
Yeah, I'm running the other way.
Yeah, but Michael Jordan, he's going to kill everybody in the alley. Even now, at whatever fucking age he is, in his horrible ass outfit. And that's what made Michael Jordan and makes Michael Jordan one of the most fascinating icons, not just in sports, but worldwide as a human. And now, the thing that is really makes him different is his impact. You know, everybody was stoked on Kobe sort of going this. He found his stride immediately after retirement. He was in Hollywood. He put out this project. He got an Academy Award. He had clearly found his route as a family man. And like, he had the potential to do the Michael Jordan thing, where you build your brand beyond just, yeah, there are shoes, and the shoes are important. But it's not the shoes, man. It's the image that sells the shoes. That's what's important. And that Michael Jordan developed beyond his basketball career, his original career, the thing that gave him influence more than anyone else I've seen ever do anything ever. It's 30 years removed from Fool's prime, or 20, and he's still one of the most influential humans walking the face of the earth. He doesn't even do anything, bro. There's not like a thing. Like, what is Mike? He plays golf. He gambles. He fucking does docs and like interviews about his shit.
That's it.
And last thing I'll say about this before we move on to our next call. I brought this up on Oysters, Clams, and Cockles, but there's this famous video back in, I grew up in Houston, right? In 2005, I was in like my young prime, you know, high school, end of high school, going into college, that sort of point in your life where you're like, everything is crazy and exciting. And Houston rap at that time just happened to be at its peak. It was when Mike Jones and Chamillionaire and Paul Wall and Slim Thug and all these guys broke out nationally, and Houston rap was the thing, right? Which eventually hilariously bred Drake, which is neither here nor there other than to say that Houston is the most influential rap city, underappreciated influential rap city outside of New York and LA and Atlanta and Chicago. But nobody gives us any credit because we talk slow and drink syrup too much and all of our rappers OD. But that's okay.
Yeah, and they're all dead.
Most of them are dead. But in 2005, we have a new generation now, thankfully. Shouts to Travis Scott, Max O'Cream, and everybody else who's attempting to bring us back. But in 2005, at the forefront of all that, Chamillionaire exploded. He had a platinum album. Ridin' Dirty was an insane, insane hit single. So he was an A-list celebrity for a short period there. Not that that's – it doesn't matter that he was or wasn't. I'm just saying that's where he was. It's not like that's the now he's not and it's not cool anymore. It doesn't matter. It's just a stupid part of our culture. But he was an A-list celebrity with access to places that Michael Jordan might be, is my point. And at one point he got invited to a party with Michael Jordan. And Chameleon Air grew up with two idols, Michael Jordan and Michael Jackson. There's this famous YouTube video. Google Chameleon Air Michael Jordan, and you'll find it. Chameleon Air. And like four people just get that joke. I don't know why I do that. It's from one of his mixtapes. I'm sorry. But in this video, Chameleon Air explains at this party, he got to meet Michael Jordan. He's with his boys. Mike's talking to a few people, and he's like, I'm going to go for it. So he goes over, and he sees Mike taking pictures with people all night, and he goes over, watch the full video for the full story. Basically, long story short, Michael Jordan shits all over him. He suns him to a degree that is very disrespectful in front of a bunch of people at a party. He's basically like, fuck nah, I don't take pictures, get the fuck out of here. After he's been taking pictures with girls all night, which again, Mike is a prick. Mm. Keep that in mind. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But to do this to like a celebrity on a come up, to not realize the impact you have on people, this isn't a public circumstance. It's not like he's being bugged by a bunch of little kids and shit at the same time. This is a grown man humbling himself to come ask you, another grown man, for a photo. And you bitch him out. Like,
in front of probably a room of like really influential, high powered people.
Like Paul Pierce had to come over and defend Chameleon Air. He was like, no, Mike, this is Chameleon Air. And Mike was like, I don't give a fuck. Like went full Chris Tucker. Like, dude, just completely shamed him. So fucked up. All that is to say, like, look, man, idolizing a celebrity you don't know is a weird thing that we do as Americans. And that's okay. If you healthily separate the man from the myth, Michael Jordan as an athlete, as a competitor, as a businessman, idolize all you want. But as like a human, just get real about it. Like Mike is a prick, okay? You don't want to be like Mike in that way.
Yeah.
Fair enough?
Fair enough.
Next call.
Oh, thank you, Ross, for wishing me one hell of a day. Can I wish you a hell of a day with fucking Treasure Planet?
God damn it.
I mean, this man from the beginning, goddamn, fuck that movie, man. Oh, I'm high as fuck. It's oh my god. Oh. Treasure Planet. You know, Ross, if you've seen this movie. But there's a lot of in-betweens. I'm not going to leave you my name.
And, okay.
Yeah, 42223 is the area code. Kentucky? Yeah, dude. Yeah, that checks out.
Here's my area.
All right, but yeah, that's pretty much it. Fuck Treasure Planet. That movie is so fucking emotional, and high me should have never watched that. All right, bye-bye.
Was this dude crying?
He was either crying or really sleepy, but I'm going to go with crying.
You know how sometimes you get drunk and all emotional as a result.
Mm-hmm.
Like some people, they drink whiskey and just become like an emotional wreck. I have found there are strains of marijuana that do that shit to you. Like there's been ones where I like smoke. It's usually an indica. And I'll 20 minutes will pass and I'll be on my couch or whatever watching some shit. Not Treasure fucking Planet. But I feel you. I get the vibe. We'll talk about Treasure Planet in a moment. I'll be watching, Muppet Treasure Island, more my style, and I'll just, like, tear up. I'm like, why the fuck am I crying right now, bro? And sometimes it just, like, weed will unlock some shit inside you where you're like, I just need a good little cry right now.
Yeah.
And you got to let it out. So our boy may have been on one here because I'm, like, 98% sure he just cried his way through that phone call. And then also, was he with a girl? And then also, I think he gave four numbers as an area code?
Area code? Yeah.
42223, that's one too many. I thought there were three in an area code. I don't know, but that
Mike, this is like,
what is Treasure Planet?
I have a cousin in South Texas, and he's like 48, and every now and then I'll get just a random drunk call from him in the middle of the night. Hey man, remember when we used to fucking hang out when we were kids? That's what this was.
You know what's weird? Every New Year's Eve, back when I drank, from like 18 years old probably to 25, I want to say. Yeah. So I stopped doing it a few years before I quit drinking, just for the record. But every fucking New Year's Eve, man, I would get drunk as hell and I would call like every New Year's, my grandma. I'd call her after the stroke of midnight, by the way. So like sometimes she'd be like sleeping. Like, she's like fucking 75, doesn't give a shit about the fact that it's New Year's. Now she's 90, by the way.
Right.
Can you imagine being 90 years old? If I make it to 90, it'll be a fucking miracle. Come on, science and medicine. Get me there. What was my point?
Calls. You're calling somebody.
My grandma.
When you're, your grandma,
oh,
when you're,
oh, yeah. So I would call my, I would call my grandma with like that, with that vibe. I love you, grandma. I just want you to have a phenomenal 2014. And she'd be like, okay, honey, I love you. Y'all have heard my grandma on the show. She's like the sweetest lady ever. So she would never be upset. But it was like so weird that I had this urge, like this drunk emotional urge to call my family members and be like, I fucking love you, man. Happy fucking New Year. Like, well, why? Next, have you seen Treasure Planet?
No, you're going to have to walk me through because I don't watch a lot of these animated movies. I eventually get to them.
I haven't seen this shit, bro. I don't know what the fuck he's talking about.
You haven't seen it?
No.
Because it's an animated like Disney movie. I figured you saw it.
No, but this is one of those ones where when I saw the trailer, I was like, what the fucking bootleg shit is this? Like, what is this? Who? I don't know. It looked like a knockoff.
Yeah, it's from like the early 2000s, right?
So I never went after it. Yeah, it's a 2002 like adaptation of Robert Louis Stevenson's Treasure Island, which is probably part of the reason I never found my way towards it. Like I said, I already had my Treasure Island. Muppet Treasure Island is the only one I need, and it's the best one, and any other one is probably shit by comparison. So I'm certainly not going to watch it after this fool just called in blubbering the whole time. Like, I've got enough emotional shit in my life right now. But
what's the movie that makes you just cry all the time?
Man, Joker. Man, there are a lot. Like, if you wanted to hit some that are like Crash, have fun with that. Have fun with Crash. Nobody's ever watched Crash and the credits roll and they're like, I can't wait to get out and just live right now. Like, that movie ends and you're like, fuck! You need an antidepressant. Crash is definitely one. I'm trying to think of like sad cries though, because not like inspirational cries, because there's a lot of those too.
Yeah.
Damn, I fucking cry a lot. I'm an emotional vessel. I don't know.
That movie Big Fish gets me.
Which
one? Big Fish with the Tim Burton movie.
I've only Ewan seen McGregor. It's like way back in the day though.
Yeah. That one, Brokeback Mountain. It's like really sad at the end.
I can't quit you, Mike.
I can't quit you.
Now, what will make me cry is the thought of, and I've shared this before too, we're going down memory lane today, folks. Last thing before we go to our next call, is the thought of me on the floor of my dad at the time living in a garage apartment when I had been kicked out of my mom's house and I was in and out of jail and kept failing drug tests. And I was on the floor in my dad's garage apartment in the living room. And it was a one bedroom and he was in the bedroom and I was in the living room on a fucking air mattress with a fucking portable DVD player that's the size of my iPhone now. This is like 2000 and, you know, let me think, 2000, what's 2020 now? 2013 probably. And, or whenever fucking Brokeback came out on DVD, because it was right after it came out on DVD. And for whatever reason, it was the only, and this was in Montrose too, just to add another layer of gay to it. And my dad, it was the only fucking DVD in the house and I hadn't seen it. And obviously it had been nominated for all this stuff. And I'm a huge fan of both the actors in it. And so I had this night that was one of the lower, I can name a few that are like obvious low points in my life. One of them was when I woke up in Hayes County Jail the night after I got arrested that produced the mugshot for this podcast, the logo for this podcast, when I realized I had peed myself and in my sleep on the floor of the jail. And another one of them was watching Brokeback Mountain on a portable DVD player the size of an iPhone 11 Plus on the floor of a garage apartment in Montrose after I'd been ejected from my mom's house. And I remember just laying there watching these two gay dudes just try to figure it out. And I was just, and they're crying and I was like crying. And I was just like, fucking God, life is hard, man.
It's unfair. Yeah.
For that reason, that was my Brokeback Mountain experience.
I used to be a film critic and I was working for when Brokeback Mountain came out, I was working for a small newspaper in deep South Texas where there are not a lot of gay people.
Yeah. And well, they're probably the same percentage of gay people.
Right.
With a whole different spin.
Exactly. And I wrote a really positive review of the movie. And then after that, I kept getting like messages and like from like the gay community being like, hey, what's up? You want to hang?
Holy shit. We have one friend in South Texas now.
Yeah.
That we can identify. Yeah. In all fairness, the state of Texas, we took a while. We were not quick with the rest of the South to coming around on things like gay marriage.
Oh, no.
It was a massive, massive pain in the ass for many, 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 many years. Okay. Want to do another one? Next call.
Next call.
Hey, Ross. This is John from Houston, Texas. I was just listening to episode 285, and you were talking about how in foreign countries like India, Pakistan, Iraq, more in the Middle East, they use their right hands for food and other shaking hands and whatnot, and their left hand for simply cleaning their assholes. And that's true. My dad, who spent 4 years in the United States Army, served 2 years in Iraq, part of Operation Iraqi Freedom, and he told me that he once offended somebody for simply shaking their hand with his right hand and covering their hand with his left hand, which is a common thing here in the States. But that made that Iraqi man so mad because he felt disrespected that my father touched his hand with what the Iraqi man perceived as his shit hand. Anyway, Ross, love the show. Love what you're doing. Keep going at it, man. Gang, gang, gang. Peace.
Oh, fuck, dude. I cannot get over this shit. Literally, it's no wonder we're spreading coronavirus all over the damn place. I don't want to be insensitive to other cultures, but I will be. Nobody should have a shit hand. If we haven't already retired the shit hand in all cultures, let's focus on that for the remainder of the year when we're focusing on washing hands and getting social distancing norms back or whatever the fuck. Let's also focus on removing the shit hand. Mike?
Would it be helpful just to confirm that, yes, we all have a shit hand. Let's just all stay away from that hand.
But we all have one, but like you wash it.
Yeah.
I use a toilet paper. There's a substance between my shit hand and my shit. I don't just go at my b-hole or two-hole or asshole, as our caller called it, with a bare hand. That's chaos.
That's chaos.
Like, dude, that what doesn't make sense to me about this is that long ago, like, you know, watch Castaway. Tom Hanks doesn't wipe his two-hole with his bare fucking hand. He finds a leaf that works and shit. Like, there are materials, natural materials in this world that have been grown by Mother Nature, shouts to Earth Day yesterday, for our two-hole to be cleansed. Get a bidet, fucking a fire. Look, if push came to shove, if everything else failed, I'd be in my backyard, pants down, gardening hose out, bent over, thumb over the fucking thing, nozzle to make it spray hard, and I'd be cleaning the two-hole power washer style. Mm-hmm. It would never come down to bare hand on asshole touching.
No.
I will never have a shit hand. I can promise you this.
Maybe I misunderstood the call, because I figured that they were wiping with TP or something, hand all the time.
Yeah, this came up recently, Mike.
Yeah.
Okay, somebody called in and said that this is because we were complaining about, I had this whole problem with toilet paper before I secured what's the equivalent of 96
right.
rolls.
Right.
And by the way, I've used like two of them now. So if anybody needs a roll, holler at your boy. I can now spare a square. But we were talking about toilet paper. I was complaining about the lack thereof.
Right. I remember
and it
now.
Came up that in other, there's these cultures where they literally just wipe with their bare hand.
Yeah,
sorry, I should have given you the context.
No, I remember now.
So yeah. He's saying that his dad had a specific story to speak to that. But by the way, I love the handshake where you shake hands and then you put the hand over the hand.
Mm-hmm.
If it's in the – don't power move it that way. It shouldn't be a power move.
Yeah.
That isn't like the – now I'm in control and then you violent – that's not the Trump handshake. That's not what you
right.
do.
Yeah.
That's a comfort handshake.
Mm-hmm.
Like we are closer than – I don't do that shit for everybody.
No, it's like I appreciate you.
Yeah, like, dude, what's up? Like, or if I, like, miss somebody, I haven't seen them in a long time, like, they'll get the hand over the hand. It's not a power move. And also, again, I'm not putting my poo on you on anybody either.
Me neither.
The shit hand. What a mess. Literally. Just next call.
Next call.
One hell of a day. I like the way that sounds. Hi, this is Maureen. I was just wondering. So I see you on Twitter, and, like, I like your tweets. Do you, like, recognize people's Twitter handles, like, that interact with you on social media? Like, do you recognize them, and you're like, that's blah, blah. I bet they're having a good day. You know? I don't know. Have a good day. Game, 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 bye.
It was a girl.
Yeah.
A girl called the phone.
1 in 90.
Yeah. Dude, I recognize people on Twitter.
It's a girl.
That have interacted with me since legit 2011 in some cases. Like, no lie, it is nuts. And people rotate kind of in and out too. Like, I won't see some of y'all for like a year and then suddenly you're back all in my mentions again. It's really, really funny. But no, there are certainly people that I recognize and in the different arenas too. So there will be RBP listeners on Twitter that become like, that interact with me often enough to where I recognize them, their avatar, their name, whatever. And that's very cool to me. And then it happens on Instagram and shit as well in the comments and then on Patreon and then and especially on Twitch now. It's for sure something. When you spend as much time with this audience, with your audience as I do, which is like, that's the big thing with me that I have really tried to make sure it remains a focus throughout my whole career, 10-year career so far, is like, I don't just want to put out content and then just go back to the content. Like, it's like, I like putting out the content, marketing it, interacting with the audience, being active on Twitter and Instagram and shit. Like, that means a lot to me. And it's a big part of the reason our Instagram stories sort of developed the way they did, with everybody sending me all those pictures on Snapchat and shit. And it's just, yeah, so I for sure recognize people. I wish you had told me who you were so I could have seen if I recognized you, but you didn't. You withheld. It's like you get off on being withholding.
Yeah. I only recognize famous people who retweet or like or comment on my tweets or from my podcast account.
Oh, everybody notices those.
That shit hardly ever happens. It actually happened this morning, which was nice.
Who was it?
Nobody you would know. It's from my Star Trek podcast. One of the actors from Star Trek Voyager, and he was also a director, retweeted our podcast. And
that's cool as shit.
Told people to listen, so that was great.
No, that's the dream, especially if you're doing a podcast about a show, for somebody from that universe to retweet it.
Yeah.
Whenever for like Freeze All Motor Functions, we've had like a couple of the actors like one of our tweets or shit. Mm. We like, me and Jared and the artist formerly known as intern Serena, we just like text it back and forth to each other all day and take turns masturbating. It's like the funnest thing in the world.
That's what we're doing today.
Yeah. No, it's the greatest. Mm-hmm. All right. But a female caller, that was phenomenal. What an exciting rush we all just got out of hearing a female voice. So nice. Next call.
Now on to a male voice.
Hey, Ross. This is Cole from the Jefferson City area of Missouri. Midwest gang. Anyway, I just listened to the epic episode with Mr. Caballero. What a fucking legend, let me just say. But it got me starting to think, today's quitting day, this is on April 20th, the big old 420, and I wouldn't say I have a problem, but I kind of figured out what you kind of figured out about yourself. Alcohol is not my thing, and I kind of turned to weed, and being from the Midwest, you know, Missouri, that's not exactly cool here, so to speak. You know, my folks don't like it. You know, I just started a new job as a carpenter right out of college. That was what I wanted to do, and I'm doing it. But it just makes me nervous, you know, with it still being semi-illegal. You know, it is illegal here. I mean, you can get your license, you know, all that good shit. But I don't know, man. I would like some guidance or some advice on how to tackle this, or if it's even worth tackling, or if I should just kind of say fuck it, you know, and hate my life for a while. I mean, I don't know. Just, you know, you've got some good words. Give me give all of us your good words. All right. Gang, gang, gang. Thanks, buddy. See ya.
Cole in Missouri thinks I have good words, which is funny. Also, shout out to the RBP Carpenter gang. If you have not listened to episode 287 with Tony Cavallaro by now, what the fuck?
I had the pleasure of recording that call and just laughing my ass off for about 45 minutes. It was great.
What, me and Tony?
Yeah.
Dude, the Zoom. Oh, I put the full video on YouTube.com.
Oh, you did?
Bowling Media.
Just watching that man makes you laugh. He's just naturally fucking hilarious.
I put up that Instagram post that's like all the different faces that he made during the course of the, just several different, like, and me reacting to him.
Yeah.
That took me 2 minutes to pull together because I literally just clicked and he was making a crazy face, screen capture. Clicked, crazy face, screen capture. Clicked, like holding up a pencil, screen capture. Clicked, flexing, screen capture. Like, it was so fucking easy because he's so animated and entertaining. Tony was phenomenal. By the way, he's promoted the shit out of the episode for us. Show him so much love on social media. He just put up another post literally 3 minutes ago. Oh, an hour ago, I got the notification on Instagram that he put up a full-blown post for us for his 400,000 Instagram followers. So that means a lot. Y'all make sure you show Tony love in return. Mike, what's up?
Yeah, I mean, not only is he hilarious and such a great talent and already has a great amount of celebrity and notoriety, but he was talking about his auditions for SNL. I was just thinking, if this guy was on SNL, he would have owned the past decade. Because he would have been in everybody's living rooms every Saturday. And he is so funny and so talented and such a presence. He would have blown everybody away.
It's weird to me that they, because like he clearly has that, the it factor that you need to capture people on screen. And it's weird to me that they didn't see that more, that Lauren or whoever the fuck. But whatever, man. I still, SNL is like the most complex. It's like,
who knows?
Crazy, that world.
Yeah.
Anyway, we are on day four of quitting day, Cole in Missouri, and I want to fucking gouge my eyes out without nicotine, by the way. You know an airplane I picked the wrong day to quit drinking, or the wrong week to quit drinking.
Yeah, yeah.
I picked the wrong week to quit sniffing glue. I feel like I picked the wrong, worldwide plague to quit nicotining. But hey, here we are. We're on day fucking four and we're all doing it. I have to like run 3 miles a day now or I go insane and my legs hurt so bad from shin splints. It's just like the lesser of two evils. But Cole ditched alcohol and has turned to weed and is dealing with the stigma. And I've spoken about the stigma of marijuana and smoking weed and sort of the stoner stigma and like the lazy fucking bum stigma that comes with it. And first of all, I want to say, this is why I talk about this shit so much. I think some people get annoyed because they're like, Ross, we get it, you're high, or you smoke weed, or like, listen, I talk about it this much, not because I think it's cool, or like, oh, look at me, I smoke weed. It literally is so fucking stupid how many people take heat for this that I'd rather take it to try to normalize it. Like, it doesn't matter for me. I work for me. There's nothing anybody can do. The fucking cops aren't coming for me. Nobody in Austin cares about weed anymore. It's still illegal, but nobody cares. Like, there is no downside for me. I'm not married anymore. I don't have to deal with any fucking judgment from like in-laws or some shit. I don't have kids. There's nobody coming for my children's. Like, I'm going to talk about it as much as I want to because of dudes like this. Because it's fucking crazy to me that it's okay for you to put up you cheersing yourself 9 times in the mirror and it's funny, but if I did that with a bong, it's like degenerate. Like, that's not fair. I don't drink your liquid or whatever. Y'all, you have your thing and I have mine, but like don't put a stigma on mine that's not there. I did, I think, 15 episodes in like 12 days or some crazy shit. I was high for like 8 of them. The other day I put up an Instagram, I literally smoked on 420 and then went and ran 2 miles. Like in a 7 minute and 50 second pace or some shit. Like, not to toot my own horn. And that's not that fast. But the point is this. You don't have to, the stigma might be there. Don't play into it. Don't give that fucking energy to that shit in your head, dude, because it's not real. And there's this guilt to it that I think as a society in America, we sort of added to it. Like, even when I used to smoke in high school, like, I remember having that feeling, like, what, am I just like a stoner bum now? It's like, that's fucking insane. Why? Because it relaxes you? I'm sorry. Are a bunch of y'all like drinking and going out and running? Doing projects and shit? Like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
It's just a different substance. And for some people, alcohol works. For some people, weed works. For just as many people, weed doesn't work. Like, it just... But if it works for Cole, get off his fucking ass. Like, let the dude live. What the hell is wrong with you people? I'm so sick of hearing about people who are dealing with specifically, like, fuck your coworkers or whatever. Like, I get it. That's never going to change, probably. Or at least it'll be a while. But your family and friends? Like, your fucking family and friends are giving you shit? That shit pisses me off. So if you're somebody who has spent time giving energy to that, like, either hating on somebody because they have a different vice than you, or judging them because they have a different vice than you, or feeding this bullshit stigma that stop it, please, because it's fucking annoying as hell, man, and it makes my life harder, and everybody who's like me, because that's what feeds, like, these idiot old whiteheads in politics who keep this shit from getting legalized across the board.
Right.
Because it has to start with younger people. And then, like, listen, you think my parents were as cool with weed as they are now before I started going full stoner on them? No. You know why they're cool with it? Because I proved to them, look, I can live this lifestyle and I'm not only productive, but better off for it. So now my parents are all on board with weed being legalized all the fuck over the place. And they'll talk about it. And, like, that's the difference, is if you have to stand up for shit. And at some point, this will get changed across the board, and slowly but surely the stigma will decrease. And it's way worse than if you're listening in California right now, you're like, the fuck are you talking about, bruh? Yeah, fuck you, dude. It's not the same for us down here. We still deal with all, like, the weird shit in the South of, like, it's a goddamn time machine in some cases. It's like fucking 1942 in here. Yeah. It's killing me. And if you hear all the frustration and anger in my voice, it's because I'm still sitting in a city where I'm about 95% certain that over 60% of the population smokes weed, and it's illegal. Like, it's just like we're living in the fuck. What was it called when they made alcohol illegal? Prohibition.
Oh, prohibition. Yeah.
Like, why? Yeah, why are you making us do this, bro? Like, why are you making me fuck around with a sketchy ass weed dealer? Come on.
It's exactly like that. Yeah. You know, when you said you on 420, you smoked and then you ran 3 miles after.
Yeah, I think it was two that day. But yeah.
Okay. Well, that reminds you, I was watching The Breakfast Club the other day, me and my wife, just like one of our quarantine, we're having like a John Hughes marathon.
Yeah.
And it reminded me of that scene where Emilio Estevez gets high in The Breakfast Club and everyone else is all just fucking stoned out and just out of it and half asleep, but it energizes him and he like does a million like backflips and he starts punching the wall and he just screams and the fucking window breaks. Like, yeah. It's insane. Yeah. I love that.
Dude, different strokes for different folks.
Right.
Right. Anyway, good luck, Cole. But my advice would be maybe keep it to yourself more for now, and you kind of slow play it, right? But the more open and communicative you are with your people and people in general about weed, I think the better. And even if it's illegal, like, but also, like, yeah, you know, you're gonna be all right. Yeah, what y'all probably have it decriminalized, or if you don't, just look at the whatever the rule is. It's probably like if it's under 2 ounces, you're solid. Just don't ever carry more than 2 ounces and you're solid. Like, yeah. It's like a fucking ticket, man. Or I don't know your circumstances. If you get drug tested and shit, that's a different deal. Cole, don't lose your job because of me.
No.
All right, next and final call, Mike.
Hey, Ross. It's Blake from the Houston area. Just wanted to ask a simple question. Well, what defines someone as a simp? Like, what makes a guy a simp? I'm sure you know what this means. Maybe you don't. I don't know. Basically, like, any guy who, like, does too much for women makes him a simp. Something like that. I'm sure the definition's somewhere on the internet. But, yeah, just wanted to ask that question, you know. Just what makes a guy a simp? And is it bad? Is it good? Is it, you know, what are the pros and cons to being a, quote, simp? Yeah. Love the pod. Gang, gang, gang. Peace.
What the fuck? A simp? What are you fucking kidding me, dude? I'm at the age where when the younger generation fixates on some dumb shit like simp or bet or no cap, like, I gotta be really careful with integrating any new vocabulary, and simp is not happening for me. I fucking hate this one. Y'all are killing me with this one. The overuse of simp is a plague on our diction. I've gotten so many questions about, like, what do I look like? Urban fucking dictionary? Just look it up. I don't know. I didn't invent this shit. What? But look, okay, Wiktionary calls it, says, it's a simple person lacking common sense, a fool or simpleton, a man who foolishly overvalues a woman and puts her on a pedestal.
Right.
So it's like the opposite of a pimp is supposed to be the play. This is
right.
I don't, what? It doesn't feel like the word we should be, look, no cap is at least fun and bet is at least fun. Like, simp just makes me feel like we've done away with all the insults that also like rip another group of people, in this case, women. Like, we've done away with most of our sexist, homophobic, racist phrases. Like, why are we adding one in now that feels sexist? Like, this is just a shitty one. I don't like it, Mike.
Yeah, I don't like it. It sounds silly, too. Simp.
Also, I might be one. But I just don't like saying it. It's not a fun simp.
Yeah.
And also, that first Wiktionary definition, that's not right. A simple person lacking in common sense, a fool or simpleton, nobody's ever used it that way.
No.
It's a man who foolishly overvalues a woman and puts her on a pedestal, clearly. Simp. Anyway, that's the hotline calls for the day. Thank you all for everybody who said 888-WR-BOLIN. Hopefully that'll give you a good taste for how our hotline call extravaganzas work on Patreon. We typically try to get about 10 calls in on there and roll through a whole bunch of subject matter. We have a ton of fun every month. And I got a lot of requests from people who were like, look, dude, appreciate that you had the idea to do Hotline Call Extravaganza and a special guest each month on Patreon. Fuck that. Just do the special guests on the regular show and give us another Hotline Call Extravaganza. And I was like, you know what? Fine. Maybe I'll do that. So this month, I'm thinking about either halvesing, like, okay, so this first one this weekend is definitely going to be full Hotline Call Extravaganza on Patreon. But after that, I'm thinking about going with either like a hotline call driven, but like maybe half and half and do some other segments too. I'm still considering what to do for the second episode on Patreon this month, but I do appreciate all the feedback. And if you have any further thoughts on that, holler at me on social media at WRBolin. We do have one more segment. It's not really a segment, but let's do it. RBP Book Club pick number two.
Oh, awesome.
So our second pick, because it's the year of the comeback and because the movie, or one of the movies that's been made into a few movies, is one of my all-time favorites, and I have never done the book the justice of reading it. We're going to do The Count of Monte Cristo.
Ooh, nice.
By Alexandre Dumas. So we're going from a living, breathing 2020 author who just dropped a new novel in Drew McGarry to Alexandre Dumas, who I'm pretty sure I won't be able to get on the show. Like we got Drew. I don't think I'm going to be able to make that happen unless we can get like a dev situation where like the computer can bring 1,000 years ago into my screen or whatever.
Yeah, we can maybe conjure him if we try really hard. Do you have a Ouija board? I don't know.
I've got like some Wiccan candles in the garage that I can bring out to like light and try to count. Yeah, we can try some evil shit. We'll see what happens. But I'm stoked to read The Count of Monte Cristo. This one is longer. So I'm going to give you all a little longer. I'm not going to like show up next week like, all right, time to discuss The Count of Monte Cristo. 500 fucking pages. But it is one of the great, if not the greatest comeback story that's not biblical of all time. And it's also arguably a revenge story. No, it is full-blown revenge too. It's fucking awesome. The movie is so, so dope. Do not watch the movie. You have to read the book. It's the book club. You can
Which version of the movie are you?
Let me
the
tell
one from
you
like
real
the
90s? Quick. Count of Monte Cristo movie. 2002.
Okay.
Yes, sir. The 2002 version starring my dudes, Jim Caviezel.
Mm-hmm.
And then what is the bad guy's name? I can never remember this fool's name. Dagmar. Wait, no, wrong person. Guy Pearce.
Guy Pearce.
Guy Pearce right. is so hateable.
Yeah. That guy's fucking awesome.
Oh my God, he makes you want to kill him so bad. That movie's phenomenal. Read The Count of Monte Cristo. We'll talk about it in like six episodes or some shit. I'll give you all some warning, but just get started. I want to get the announcement out there. The Count of Monte Cristo by Alexandre Dumas. I never read it. I've watched that movie 30 fucking times. Need to read the book. Stoked to do it. And that will do it for today's show. But before you head out to take on the world, it's time for some very important announcements. To support this podcast directly in exchange for two additional episodes of RBP ad-free each month for just $5, go to patreon.com/RossBolin Podcast. If RBP is one of the things keeping your spirits up right now, spread the word about the show. Support us on Patreon. Fulfill your legal obligations. You have three of them you've been saddled with as a result of having listened to this entire podcast. First, rate and review on Apple Podcasts. Second, share the show with one person this week, one person next week, one person every week. And third, use our sponsor codes when you have them. Our sponsor code today doesn't exist, but Patreon does. Keep that in mind. Follow us on Instagram at the Ross Bolin Podcast, on Twitter at Ross Bolin Pod. We're also on Facebook somewhere if you're the middle-aged aunt of one of our listeners. If you have not listened to RBP 282 for updates and explanation on my personal situation this past several months, the divorce thing, all that, I highly recommend you do it for the sake of what's going on here. I am back, and you need to know why. RBP 282, go listen. Check out Bolin Media's television and film podcast, Oysters, Clams, and Cockles, available wherever RBP is available. We just finished up coverage of Devs, the series, or the season and series finale, it probably turns out. And we've been talking about Westworld as well. Speaking of which, Freeze All Motor Functions is your Westworld companion podcast for season 3. We got 2 weeks left, hosted by Jared Borislow, co-hosted by myself, and again brought to you by Bolin Media, also available wherever RBP is available. Freeze All Motor Functions if you are watching Westworld. Mike, where can we follow you on social and hear more of your voice, sir?
You can find me on Twitter at Mike Moody, at MikeMoody. Also, I host a Star Trek podcast at Star Trek Pod.
Oh yeah, and that will do it for episode 288. RBP 288, recorded and produced remotely by Mike Moody of Permanent Record Studios in Austin, Texas. We'll be back Friday with RBP 289. RBP 289 coming Friday, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, every week during lockdown. Remember, today is not Thursday. That's just your brain playing tricks on you. You are not alone. Podman gets paid. Respect Mr. Park. Strength and honor. Gang, gang, gang. Peace be with you and also with you.
Go low, baby.